Welcome to Beyond Rent, the property management podcast brought to you by Rent Manager. Each episode, we sit down with an expert to talk industry updates, tech solutions, and top tips for those in the property management space. And now, let's get to the conversation and go Beyond Rent.
Welcome to Beyond Rent. Joining me today is Pete from VPM Solutions. He's here to discuss how to hire the best people for your organization. This is something most of us think about on a regular basis, so I'm excited to learn more. Pete, welcome to Beyond Rent.
Joe, thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Yeah, thanks for joining me. Hiring people is so challenging. There's so many factors. You don't really know this person until you get them in there and really start working with them. So a lot of prep work has to be done and a lot of thinking before you hire the right person. So I'm really interested to hear what you have to say about it, but I want to make sure our audience knows who you are. So go ahead and introduce yourself and tell us what you do over there at VPM.
Yeah. So my name is Pete Neubig. I used to own a property management firm. I started that firm back in 2011 with 30 doors. I came from the investment side. And my business partner and I took that to about 1,000 single family properties, 3 markets, and we sold it to one of the VC firms. Was with them for about 2 years as a regional vice president. Left them to start my next passion, which was VPM Solutions. And VPM is an online marketplace that is connects the property management and real estate industry with remote team members from over 120 countries. So we're the place where you can find them and pay them all through the platform. So we're big into hiring these days.
Well, and your background is great because you've been in the industry. And like you said, from 30 doors to 1,000 doors, you really kind of understand the nuts and bolts of what it takes to run a property management company from, again, the operations side to hiring to all the different elements. You were in it. And I have to think that from 30 doors to 1,000 doors, you understand all the interactions that are going to happen. And you've hired a lot of people, and I'm sure some of them were very successful, and other ones, maybe not so much.
I've hired a lot of wrong people, Joe. That's right.
Okay. I was trying to get you to say it so I didn't have to, right? Because we all make mistakes, and that's how we learn, and that's how we get really good at it. And now you really know how to hire great people. So I think you have a lot of input. Now, when you said from 30 doors to 1,000 doors, you said that was over 3 markets. What part of the country were you in?
Yeah, so I'm based in Houston, Texas. So that was our main market. And then we went to Dallas and Fort Worth were our other 2 markets. We're planning to expand into Austin when we kind of took a left turn and had an offer that I guess we didn't refuse. And we ended up selling to a bigger company.
Yeah, yeah. That's good input for people to kind of know where you're based and kind of maybe some of your experiences. And I think that there is some regionality tied to hiring sometimes and some mindsets and so forth. So I think that's helpful. So, well, let's talk about the hiring process. You have a lot of experience here. It's what you really do as your full-time gig now, right? Helping other people find the right people. So when you think about hiring, let's start at the very, very beginning. Even before you try to hire somebody, what are some of the things that somebody should have in place before they even post that ad for that position, before they start looking for somebody to hire?
Yeah, I think this is an incredible question because so many people reach out to us and they say, okay, I heard somebody say that I should get a virtual assistant, so I want to hire a virtual assistant. And then I ask the question, like, what do you want them to do? Well, I don't even know what they can do. So I'm going to back up more, right? So the first thing that you need to have is everybody should have core values. What is the culture that you want in your company? If you don't have core values and you have more than you in the organization, you have core values. They're just not the ones that you wanted. Their core values should be pushed from the top down, and it should be not pushed from the bottom up. And so, for example, like if I want to be dedicated professional who believes in the brand and do the right thing always, right? Integrity, professional, dedicated. Not only do I need to live those, but I need to have meetings with my team about these are our core values, and that needs to be part of our culture, right? And so if you don't watch the culture will end up being, well, if everybody cuts out at 5 o'clock and the phones are ringing, they don't answer the phones, that's not the dedicated professionals, right? And so all of a sudden you have to look at what that is, like what exactly is going on in your business right now, and is it what you want? And so that's the first thing, is have core values, because without core values, you don't know the type of person that you want into your organization. So that's the that's kind of the first gatekeeping, right? What's the type of person you want in your organization? And the only way you know that is by having core values and knowing your culture. The second prerequisite is having job descriptions. So I'm a huge fan of creating an org chart for what the organization looks like currently. And if you're a solopreneur or you have just you and another person, that might mean 15 boxes with your name on it. And that's okay. Each box is a hat and that's fine. And what I do is I have this org chart. When we first started, I had the org chart and Steve was my business partner. Me and Steve were in every box. But then what we did is we said, okay, well, let's identify the next five positions. And as the revenue grows, these are the positions we're going to hire. And so once I decided these are the next positions, so I'm going to take off the leasing hat, the lease marketing hat, the mains coordinator hat, whatever hat we're going to take off, you build a job description because it's imperative, especially if you're not doing the job and you haven't done the job and you're going to hire somebody to do it, you still have to know what that person needs to do. But more importantly, they need to know. The job description is kind of the rules of the game. It's the roadmap of they know what they're supposed to do. So Joe, I would tell you those two things are probably the most important aspects of knowing prior to hiring, whether you're hiring remote or somebody in your office locally.
Yeah. And I love that point about like the core values and the culture. And I have heard that similar mindset that if you haven't been intentional about it, it's still happening. But it's happening without you guiding it. You have no control over it. Years down the road, you have core values, you have a culture, but it wasn't the one that you intended to have. And now you're possibly too far down to change it, or it's going to be really difficult to change it. Now you have to really kind of go uphill with this.
Yeah. And I know a lot of people think it's hocus pocus, right? Oh, core values, hocus pocus. But I want to give you a great example because we're talking here in December of 2023. And the Denver Broncos last year, if you follow the NFL, they were a wreck. They were one of the worst teams in the NFL. They hired a new coach. And in the very beginning of the season, they were like 1-5. And now they're 6-5 as we talk to, as we're recording this. And the number one reason why they turned around, all the players are the same. The coaching staff created a new culture. And that new culture it took some time, but now it's created, a different turnaround. So when people say, well, culture is hocus pocus, it doesn't matter. I point to, a lot of sports analogies and sports teams because culture actually matters. It matters a great, great deal.
Yeah. And I would think those people that feel that way probably have not experienced culture used for the benefit of the people around it. Right. So if you've been a part of good culture, you know what it feels like, you've experienced it. And I think that example of the Broncos is great. And I can see other people say, well, I was somewhere where they had core values, they put them on the wall and they never meant anything because they didn't live by them. And I think that's a trap that some people fall into is they create core values, but they don't talk about them. They don't enforce them. They don't actually make them part of their business.
That is a huge point that you just made. There was a buddy of mine. He went to go work for a company. It was a construction company, roofing company. And he's like, they didn't have core values. So they're like, okay, let's create core values. And they're like, okay, well, we're about integrity. And he's like, but you guys you're not really about integrity because you don't do the job 100% the way it is. Like they're like, oh, Pete, we do this for the people. Like it's always about customer service. Like, but you don't live that. And so if you're just going to have core values to put a poster out there and to kind of talk about it, that doesn't mean anything. Actions. It's your actions that determine your core values, right? So I could tell my wife, hey, our core values as a family is that we don't spend money, right? We're just very conscientious of how we spend money. And then I go and I go spend a ton of money on stupid stuff. Is that a core value then? No, like I'm not following that core value. So it's not just to put on the posters and then talk the talk. You have to walk the walk, and you're not going to fool anybody if you don't walk the walk.
Yeah, that's so true. And this idea of job descriptions, we've all seen these. And I think your concept of like creating the job descriptions long before there's people to fill them is really interesting. And kind of having your name and all these different boxes so you can replace them later. I'd imagine if you had that strategy early on, it sounds like you did with your property management company, how easy it was to start recognizing when you needed help and how you needed help. It kind of starts answering questions before they're even asked, which a lot of people realize that they're kind of at their limit, but they don't know what to do. Like, well, I don't know what to give up or how to give it up. You already kind of determined that long before you hit your limit.
Yeah. And then it becomes a simple math problem. Right. If I can split off all my hats and I know that I have a leasing hat, a maintenance coordinator hat, a lease marketing hat, a property accounting hat, and I'm doing all this work, well, then it just becomes, well, I know that on average, it's going to cost me X dollars to replace this hat. Right. And maybe I can replace two or three hats with one person. And then eventually they split up. Right. So I hire somebody for maintenance coordinator and resident services. Right. There's two hats, but then I know, okay, if I can hire a virtual assistant, then I know that's $10 an hour or, you know, $30,000 a year, $20,000 a year, whatever that comes out to be. Well, as my revenue increases, then I know once I hit about 60% of what the revenue can hire for the year, then I know I can hire that position. And then it becomes very simple. It becomes math. And then I know, well, to hit that revenue, I need so many doors. And then I know, but based on my marketing spend and my conversion rate on my sales, I know how long it takes me to get those doors. So I know, okay, well, here we are in October of 2023, that by May of 2024, I'm going to need to hire somebody based on the forecast. So it all kind of works together. But if you don't have those job descriptions down, you have no idea which jobs you want to offer first, second, and third.
Yep. No, that makes a lot of sense. That's a reverse engineering a little bit of your growth too, and kind of building in the hiring as they go. So let's say you're there, right? You've got these core values and you're living them out. You've got these job descriptions and you feel really strong about it. What would be the next step? Like, I guess you said those are step one and step two. What's the next place someone wants to go?
Yeah. So obviously now I'm ready to post a job, right? Now I'll say one thing about the job description. I'm a big fan of personality profiling. So I'm a big fan of DISC. I know there's a bunch out there. DISC, it's worked for me for 20 years. And I'm very familiar. If you're not familiar with DISC, it's DISC. And basically the concept is everybody has one or two of the main attributes. Like maybe I'm a DI or I'm a DC. And then you have two other attributes that you're really not strong at, or you're not really a part of your personality. And so when I would build a job description, I would go in and I would match each job description, each bullet point of the details with the DIS or C. Right. Let me know what's the personality profile. If my job description was, you know, a quarter D, a quarter I, a quarter S, and a quarter C, well, that is a unicorn, doesn't exist. So what I had to do is I had to learn that there's certain personality types that are really good at certain things, but they're not good at other things. So I had to split those up. So for example, I'll give you the easiest example. Your accounting person is detail oriented and they're typically process oriented and they're typically introverts. Your salespeople are not detail oriented at all. They're people focused and extroverts. Well, I could not put a salesperson and an accounting person in two job roles with the same person. So if I see that my job roles are significantly different in the personality type, I have to swap them out because I'm gonna have to hire two different people, or I'm gonna have to keep doing it for a little while. So I make sure that the job description is ready to go. Now it's like, okay, now I gotta go find people. Since the pandemic, you don't have to find somebody that's 30 minutes living outside in your neighborhood or where your office is. So when I first started Empire Industries, my property management firm, we had an office. There's these things called offices before the pandemic, and everybody drove their cars to the office every day, Monday through Friday. It was a really weird concept, and I tease, but it's true, right? But I could not find anybody now. I don't know about, yeah, I think you're in Cincinnati and I don't know how the traffic is there, but in Houston, the traffic is pretty terrible. And so you can live 30 minutes away without traffic, but that could be an hour and a half with traffic. And so I was having a hard time finding anybody who would live more than 20 miles outside of the office. So think about that now. My target market is 20 minutes outside of our office. That's it. That's the radius. To find specific people. So it got more and more difficult to find people that would work for let's be honest, most property management job roles are kind of lower level job roles. They're not the $150,000 a year development jobs. They're the $35,000 a year maintenance coordinator, lease marketing, executive admin jobs. Well, after the pandemic, with the cost rising, the inflation rising here in the United States and all over the world, but most mainly in the United States, more and more people need 50, 60,000 just to keep living the lifestyle that they're accustomed to. The business can't afford that. So that's when you go and you say, okay, where can I go find great talent? Maybe people who are, you know, bilingual, people who have college degrees, but they can work at the salaries that we can afford. And so that's where VPM comes in. So if you're looking for somebody that it doesn't have to be in the office or they have to be licensed, then you can go to a job board like VPM Solutions. Also, now, of course, for local stuff, there's also lots of other job boards, right? This is a great time to be alive, right? Because we have this thing called the internet, and you have Indeed, and you have all these other. So you want to cast a huge net. The bigger the net, the better. So post your job on all this stuff, LinkedIn, Facebook, Indeed, Asking Friends, VPM Solutions, whatever it is, to get the most out of it. Now, when your job posting, it should not just be the job description. Okay. You want to make your posting, you want to ask questions on the beginning of your posting to attract the type of people you're looking for, i.e. core values. Are you, you know, do you like, are you a dedicated professional? Or do you like, you know, are you, you know, do you consider yourself somebody with high integrity? Right. Other questions could be asking them about their personality type. Do you like working with spreadsheets? Are you detail oriented? Right. And so you want to attract the type of folks that are going to be great for your organization, and also attract that they're going to have the right personality type for that job role. I'll give you an example. I had a girl one time, she got laid off. She was a school teacher and had gotten laid off. She was a high I in a disc profile. I was hiring an accounting job, which is a high C. It's the opposite end of the spectrum. And she told me that she loved accounting. And I can tell you, she can do accounting, but she didn't love it. It was not in her DNA. We ended up going with somebody else who actually was a high C and loved accounting. And that guy's still with me today. And that was like 7 years ago. So this stuff works. But that's the next thing, is the posting of the job to attract as many candidates as possible.
Yeah. And I really love how you did talk about like the changes in where we're at, right? As far as you know, the pandemic and the remote work and some of the shifts. And we do hear that, you know, many companies are bringing people back into the office. I work in an office 5 days a week. We kind of have a hybrid type mentality here, but there are a lot of remote jobs. But regardless of what you're looking for, whether you're looking for a remote and you love that idea and you want to embrace it, or if you're looking for somebody local, the concept is still the same, right? You want to cast the widest net, right? So decide what you want, decide what is the best fit for that role. Can it be remote? Does it need to be in person? And then get that widest net possible, so you have the most opportunity, right? The most at-bats to find that right person.
Yep. So now you know, okay, you know the type of person you want in the foxhole with you, on the boat, whatever you want to use as the, you know, as an example with the core values, right? You know how they should operate the section that they're doing with the job description, right? And then you know if they're the good fit for that spot on the bus, the boat, or the foxhole, right? Based on your personality type. The next piece of it is making sure that each role in your organization should have at least one number. Some people call it a KPI. Some people call it a KRA. Some people call it a metric. I call them KPIs, key performance indicators, right? And basics, like if you have 11 KPIs for that one job role, that's too many. If everything's important, nothing is important. So it should be 1 to 3 metrics, right? So obviously, as you get bigger as an organization and these hats split off, the KPIs for that job role becomes much easier. Early on, when I was a portfolio based and I had maybe just 2 or 3 people working for me, we were doing many, many different functions, all of us. And so each role had like 2 or 3 KPIs, which was really difficult to track. When I split it off and all of a sudden I had one, you know, just a few people doing maintenance coordination, or a few people just doing lease renewals, or, you know, doing collections, the KPI became much easier. But why is it important? The reason why it's important is because people inherently want to do a good job. They don't know how to do a good job unless they have a good job description and they have a report card. The KPI is the report card. So now when you're sitting down and you're going over, you know, your monthly or quarterly or annual, whatever it is, you should know, like, okay, the KPI is the North Star. If you're on a deserted island and you just looked at that KPI and you know that that job role is behaving according to plan based on that KPI, okay? That doesn't mean that everything else that they have to do doesn't, is not important. It's still important, but the KPI is really the North Star. But now this allows the person who's coming to work for you with a clean job description knowing, okay, this is kind of how I do the job, and then this is what's most important. So if everything's being equal, this is the stuff that I need to get done more importantly than anybody else.
So KPIs, I think, are really important, but I think some people struggle with these as far as creating them and creating the right ones. And like you said, 11's too many. People get lost in that. They feel overwhelmed. Sometimes one isn't enough, right? So like, are there any examples you can give us of KPIs that you have used in different roles to help create that North Star?
I'll do you even one better. So I'll give you an example, but I actually created a training course on how to build KPIs for your property management organization. It's on our VPM Academy. So you have to go in and create a, you have to go to VPM Solutions, create a free profile. You don't even have to use the system, and you have access to the whole thing, all the Academy. It's about 45 minute presentation or course, if you will. But in that course, I'll give you an example. So I had a lease renewal specialist working for me at Empire. That was her job. Lease renewals. And to get the lease renewals done, she had to do inspections. Okay. So I could have broken down each step and said, okay, I want a KPI, you know, when the lease is up, when are we sending the letter to the owner? And then I'm like, okay, well, when are we doing the CMA? When are we doing it? When are we, and in KPI, each piece of it, right? But at the end of the day, what I did is I had one KPI. The percent of leases that were on month to month had to be lower than X percent. So what, at the end of the day, what do we want, right? We want to have a lease. We want everybody to be on a lease. We know that we'll never get it 100% because we have owners that want to move back into their properties, and we have residents that are buying properties, right? And they need to go month to month over a certain point of time. So with us, we said, okay, Jessica, we need the lease renewal to be less than X percent. Now, when I first started, I think we only had about like 60% of leases on a lease, right? Which is completely terrible, right? But when you get busy, that's the first thing that goes. So her KPI originally was get it to 65, get it to 70, get it to 80. And eventually it was, I think we was 93%. We wanted 93% of all leases to be on a lease, which we knew 7% is basically going to be those month to months, or I mean, those, you know, people moving in or anything like that. Now, to get the lease renewal done, you had to do an inspection. If the inspection was not done, all right, we would not renew the lease. And so that was part of her job. So by having this one KPI, I take care of two things. I take care of making sure inspections get done, right? And I take care of making sure that the CMA is done. I make sure that the lease is created and that the lease is signed. So if you think about it, that one KPI handles everything, right? Now the first question people would say to me is, well, how do you know she's not going to just send out the lease renewal if the inspection's not done just to hit her KPI? And I go back to my core values. I hire people that have integrity. And if you have integrity, you're not going to circumvent the system. And that's really what it comes down to. So then the second thing is trust but verify. I can also run a report that showed everybody that had the lease renewal done and everybody that had the inspection done. So trust but verify, hire based on your core values, and then give them, and then make sure that you're, don't micromanage, meaning I need to KPI every aspect of the process. KPI the result, and then trust that the process, you know, if you train them correctly, the process will figure its way out.
Yeah, I heard so many good nuggets of information in there. And that training sounds phenomenal. So definitely want to recommend people jumping over to your website and getting free training. That's invaluable there. But this idea of trying to simplify those KPIs, trying to make sure you're creating ones that accomplish that end goal, but also know that that KPI is going to change over time, right? If you would have hired that person and said, hey, we're at 60% today, but your KPI is 93%, they would have been overwhelmed and said, you know what? This is unreasonable. I can't meet this expectation. They don't know what they don't even know what they're talking about. You can't get from 60 to 93 overnight, but you allow the KPI to evolve over time. It not only gave that person confidence in what they were doing, gave them a space to be successful, but it eventually started pushing them, I bet, right? Because as you got higher, you probably couldn't say, well, let's get 5% better. You're probably moving at 8% at a time, right? Like we're at 90, let's get 91, let's get 92. How high can we push this? And now this person feels motivated that they're really able to control their performance.
I'll even give you one more tidbit. I actually tied bonus structure to the KPI. So if you hit the KPI, I gave you a firm handshake and a pat on the back and an attaboy. If you exceeded the KPI, you got a bonus. And so the reason why I love working with virtual assistants is because I can bonus you $100 a month on a virtual assistant. That's the equivalent of like a day's pay. In the US, they take that $100, they throw it back in my face and say, it's not even worth a tank of gas. It took me to get here Monday through Friday, 8 to 5. And so the dollar goes a longer way. But that's what we did. So yes, you're right. Think about trying to lose weight, right? If January 1's coming around the corner, everybody says, I'm going to lose 20 pounds. Well, there's no way in heck you're going to lose 20 pounds in a week, especially if you only have 20 pounds to lose, right? If you have 180 pounds to lose, okay, it's possible you can lose 20 pounds in a week, I guess. But for the most part, you're not going to. So if you say, I want to lose 20 pounds by this week, that's crazy. If you say, I want to lose 20 pounds by the next 4 weeks, all right, maybe it's still kind of crazy, but if it's say I want to lose 2 pounds a week, right? And then I want to eventually get there. That's the same concept that we took with our KPIs, especially if that part of the business is running so inefficiently. And I used to do it where, so in this example, like say it was like 60%, we wanted to get it to, you know, not 93 right away, but I said 65. If she got it to 70%, boom, she got her a nice bonus. And then the next month, the KPI started at 70. Right, it goes to 74. And if she got it to 78, great bonus. And she just got it to, like to your point, she was motivated. She got us there quicker. Right. And then I just stopped it at 93%. I was happy. She would get it to 95%, 96%, 97%. Because why? She wanted her bonus. If you can attach the KPI to either A, something that makes you money, i.e., lease renewals made us money. Every time a lease was renewed, we made money. Or B, a way to reduce churn, right? Customer satisfaction gets increased, can reduce churn and reduce move outs, things of that nature, which by the way, makes you money. Reducing churn is the number one way to make money in business. Then the money that you, now they're tied to your goal, those KPIs are tied to the overall company goals. And now given that bonus is only a fraction of what you're making.
Yeah, you're happy to give it out, right?
100%.
Yeah.
I'd give it out every time. Exactly.
Okay. So those KPIs, again, I think people should go check out that training because I think that's something that is often missed in a lot of roles, right? Tying business objectives to a number that can be tracked and reported on. It gives people a lot of satisfaction in their job when they can hit those goals as well. So let's maybe talk real quickly as we kind of come to the end here about like, what do you do after you hire somebody? So you've hired somebody, all these things are in place. You've got the KPIs built. Any best practices around that initial onboarding?
Yeah. There's a great book called The 1 Minute Manager that I highly recommend everybody get. It's a quick read. It's maybe a half a day's worth of reading. It's a very quick read. And the concept behind it is when somebody's first new to your organization, you need to spend a lot of time with them, right? They need to understand the core values and they need a lot of training. So what worked best for me was I finally realized that 2-3 hours of training a day is too much. So an hour a day over Zoom, even if they're in the office, I did it over Zoom, right? Because we both have access to the computer and I can record it. So you record it, they rewatch it back, and then they build the manual. A lot of people say, I have to build the manual before I hire somebody. No, you don't. You don't have to build a manual before you hire them. Let them do that. People have to hear something 6 times before they get it, is a study that's been out there for many, many years. So if I'm showing you, if I'm teaching you how to do it, right, I'm teaching you over Zoom, then you rewatch it, right, and then you write it down. That's 3 times in one day. The next day, I don't ask, do you have any questions about what we went over? I go back over it again. I like to train in property management. I love to train based on each process, and I go from the process from the beginning to the end, and I train on the process. So if I'm hiring somebody for lease renewals, we can go over the lease renewal process. If I'm hiring somebody to just do pieces of different processes, I don't just go over those pieces. I go over the whole process And I start from the beginning every time. So it took me the first day an hour. By day four, it took me 4 minutes to go over it, right? By day six, they're asking better questions. Within 2 weeks, I found that the majority of job roles in property management could be taught between 2 and 3 weeks, other than maintenance. Maintenance took me 90 days. And so they, if you do the recording, then you can tag it. You can upload it to YouTube, make it where it's not public, right? And then you can tag it correctly. And there's now you have a training database and you have a manual in 2 to 3 weeks. And they have the manual. Here's the thing. When I wrote the manual myself, I had a maintenance manual. You'll love this, Joe. I had a maintenance manual. It was like 120 pages. I wrote it. The team never even read the manual. They didn't know even how to navigate it. Right. So I had them do what? Write their own manuals. Now, remember, the manual is a process. Everybody can write and can, in my company, anybody can modify a process. Don't care. It's your, especially if you own it. I want you to take ownership. If it doesn't work, I would never get upset with you. You tried something, no problem. You do not change the policy. The policy is made by the management team and the policy gets pushed down. If you want to change the policy, you can bring that up and we can discuss it, but you can change the process. I'll give you a great example. Jessica, lease renewal. We used to start lease renewal 60 days out. When she took ownership of the process, she moved it to 90 days out. I said, Jess, you moved to 90 days out. And I tried not to ask why. Don't ask why questions. What made you decide to do that? Right? Instead of why did you do that? Like now it's blame, excuse, denial. What made you decide? Well, she goes, and she gave me a great answer. Like, well, with 60 days, it was hard to get in touch with this person and this person. We were up against it in the inspection and things, you know, by 90 days, I was able to hit my KPI. I'm like, fantastic. That is now I have somebody who owned it. Now, Jessica had no idea how to do lease renewals before we taught her. But once we taught her, guess what happened within 90 days? She knew how to do them better than me, right? The student became the master, so to speak. And the rule of thumb, Joe, is the more decision points there are in a job role, the longer it takes to train. Right, with maintenance coordination, there's so many decision points that it took me 90 days. With lease renewal, there's a few decision points. It took me 2 weeks, if that makes sense. And then what you do is you let them out on their own, right? So now I do 2 weeks training. They write their manual. We go over some training. They do like kind of a lease renewal. I'm holding their hand. And the next week, 100% escalated to your property manager or you. And then by the week after, you drop that down to about 80%. And then it flips 2-3 weeks. But within 2 months, 10% of stuff's getting escalated to you. That's it. And it's like, holy crap. So all the time you spend with that person, you get back in perpetuity, right? And then the big question everybody asks is, well, what if they leave me? Well, if you're giving them a great opportunity, you're paying them well, you're making them part of the team, they have direction and they have management, not micromanagement, management, good management, and you're treating them well and you're paying them well, why would they leave? If that was the way I thought about everything, why would you start a business? What if the business doesn't make it? Why would you get this new client? What if they fire you? Like, don't think of it that way. And a lot of people do. And they're like, well, I don't want to train this person because now they're going to get trained and they might go find a better job. Be better. Be better. Make sure they don't want my team, my VAs. I had 23 of them working for me and I only had two of them leave in 7 years. People are going to leave. And if they leave for greater opportunities, then applaud them. Be grateful for the opportunity you have with them. And then go find somebody else and hire them and do the same thing. But now you have your training. Now you watch the videos, right? Now you have the manual. They can take that manual. We still have them write their own manual in that case. But that's kind of how you do it. And then once they're trained, then you don't need to spend a lot of time with them. Then I go to a weekly meeting and I like EOS. I'm a big EOS guy. Traction is the book. Entrepreneurial operating system, and I manage them, and I basically have an agenda that I stole from EOS, but I kind of bastardized it a little bit. I kind of made it my own. So you do good news first, right? So everybody, what do we do as humans? We always want to say bad news first. Right? We talk about good news, then we go over to KPI, and if it hasn't been hit 2 weeks in a row, it's going to go into the issues list. Then we're going to do what were the tasks for last week that need to be done? If a task wasn't done, does it need to go on the issues list? Then we talk about the issues. During the week, if it is not a code red, put the issue on the issues list. We don't need to Slack or email back and forth 100 times over something that can be done in our weekly meeting, right? So then as the leader or business owner, I always ask the question, what can I do to make your job easier? As business leaders or owners, okay, our job is to take care of the team, not the client. It's the team's job to take care of the client. It's the client's job to take care of the business, and it's the business job to take care of us. So don't skip the step. Take care of your team. The client is not always right, you know, but what can you do to make your team's job easier? And it might be you have to hire somebody. It might be you have to create a report, right? Like with Rent Manager, you can create all these cool reports, right? It might be that. It might be that I got to talk to Debbie in accounting because every time I reach out to her, she doesn't return my call. I get it. Whatever it is that you have to do to make to move that needle, that's what you do. And then the last piece, in Traction, they say rate the meeting. I'm not a big fan of that. More, I'm a big fan of what is your stress level from 1 to 10? Because if the stress level is a 10 plus 2, 3, 4 weeks in a row, that is an indicator. That's a tap on the shoulder saying this person's getting ready to leave, or it's a tap on the shoulder saying you have way too much work for this person, or it's a tap on the shoulder that this person's not in the right seat. Great person, but they just can't handle it because they're not in the right seat. Or it could be personal. So I'll give you a great example. I had somebody had a 10. They would never attend. They had a 10. So I pulled them aside. I had a meeting with them one-on-one. I said, hey, just curious, you know, your stress level's at a 10. I don't see things being that bad right now. We're not in summer. Like, you know, what's going on? Oh, well, my brother got hit by a car. He's in the hospital. We don't know if he's going to make it. And I'm like, okay. But that allowed me to connect with my team on a human level. If people, like, just like we don't want to churn, like we want to create relationships with our owner clients, right? If you're a property manager, you want to create relationships with your owner clients, because you know that if you have a relationship with your owner client, if you mess up, he's still not going to leave you, right? But what we do is we tend to forget that we need to have relationships with our team. And if you can have a relationship with a team member, Leon, who's one of the guys that works for me, he's been with me for 7, 8 years now. He came with me from Empire to mine to VPM, a good buddy in mine now. He lives 2,000 miles away in Mexico. I see him maybe once a year, but that guy is, you know, he knows I care because we've had some of these great relationships. You know, we built a relationship over time. So the more relationship building you can do with your team, that doesn't mean that they're not going to leave 100%. They get a great opportunity and they have to leave. That's fine, but they're not going to leave you because, you know, they can get 15 cents more an hour. Like that, they're just not going to.
Yeah.
And that's how you do it, brother.
Now, and I, you know, again, so many great bits of information in there. And I love the part about training. And I've heard in the past, like somebody will say like, well, what if I train somebody and they leave? The counter argument is, well, what if you don't train them and they stay, right? Then, yes. Then you've got this employee that doesn't know what they're doing. They're going to be an underperformer. You're going to be frustrated. They're going to be frustrated and they're probably going to leave anyways, right? Or they're going to stick around and they're not going to do a great job. So either way, you have to train your people. I love the part about connecting on a human level, treating people with respect, understanding it's not always work that stresses people out, right? We all have lots going on in our lives, well beyond the 8 to 5 or whatever schedule we work. So, so much really good information, for people to take away. And as we come to a conclusion here, Pete, want to make sure you have an opportunity. How can people learn more about you and VPM Solutions? Cause you have training out there. You've got opportunities to hire people, a lot of good resources that I think they'll want to find out.
Yeah. Thank you for that. If you go to vpmsolutions.com, that's our marketing site. And on that site, you can get, I have 50 plus job descriptions with this profile and suggested KPIs for just about every job role in property management. And then if you create a free profile and you go into the application, you can access VPM Academy. It's not just for VAs. It's also for people who are in the States or own a company. And that's where you can get all that training. We have training from maintenance coordination, property mill training, all the way to, you know, how to build KPIs and org charts for your company.
Now that's awesome. And, we talked a lot about VAs, but the reality is we live in a world where these virtual assistants are really, the same as a local employee at this point, right? They're just located differently. You're going to treat them the same. You're going to train them the same. And so all of these resources, you're absolutely right. They apply no matter what. So, well, Pete, thank you so much. So much good information. I'm sure the audience is going to love this episode. So thanks for joining us. And thanks to our listeners for tuning in to another episode. And until next time, keep going Beyond Rent.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Beyond Rent. If you enjoyed this podcast, spread the word on social media and with your peers in the industry. To be notified when more episodes are released, subscribe using your favorite podcast player. Beyond Rent is brought to you by Rent Manager Property Management Software. Learn more about Rent Manager's industry-leading software solutions at rentmanager.com. Until next time, keep going Beyond Rent.